Welcome to Florida.
That is the voice of New York Times best-selling author and award-winning environmental reporter Craig Pittman. My name is Chad Scott, and this is Welcome to Florida. We will head to Craig's old stomping grounds in our episode and the Pensacola area. But before we go there, let's start with your latest Florida Phoenix column, which focuses on Eatonville, just north of Orlando. And Eatonville, for starters, Craig, before we get into the column, is important for a couple of reasons.
Yeah, it's the first ever incorporated Black community in the United States. And probably the most famous person who grew up there is Zora Neale Hurston, the famous writer who gave us Their Eyes Were Watching God, among other great publications. And so, but I was interested because they're having a big fight over growth and development there right now, where some people came in who wanted to build on what used to be their school property. And they didn't want to follow what was in the comp plan. And initially, the city council was in favor of that. But then they heard from the residents who said, this is going to completely change the character of this historic Black community, and we don't like it. And so it became a real kind of fight there in the town council. And to me, it kind of sums up what's going on in a lot of places around the state, where people, they want growth. They want, you know, the positive changes that they see growth bringing, but they also don't want it to change what they value about Florida. They don't want to lose, you know, the rural nature of where they live, for instance, or the natural beauty of what attracted them to the place.
It's a matter of growth versus unfettered growth, unmanaged growth, just wanton growth. And that's, you know, again, I'll speak for myself here in Fernandina Beach. I'm about as anti-growth, anti-development as you're ever going to find. And I still, you know, recognize there is need for some development, some growth, but not reckless, wanton, just wherever, whatever, regardless of the cost growth. Now, you mentioned a term that, if people listen to a local news or radio or read a local paper, and we hope they do, what's a comp plan?
A comprehensive plan for where that growth should go, that all the counties and all the cities have a comp plan, and they spent quite a lot of time drawing it up. And a lot of developers come in and say, I need a change in your comp plan. Yeah. And they don't follow the plan. They want what they want. They want what will maximize their profit. And a lot of the municipal and county governments have been basically saying, whatever you want, here, we'll change ourselves for you. And it often winds up in a disaster of one type or another.
Yeah, you can read that column, as you can all of Craig's work with the Florida Phoenix, floridaphoenix.com. You mentioned Zora Neale Hurston. There's an episode in the archive all about Zora Neale Hurston. I've written recently about the Environmental Learning Center. I took a trip there recently in Vero Beach, as well as the A.E. Baucus Museum in Fort Pierce. That's on rovology.com. And we want to thank the folks at windstormproducts.com for sponsoring this week's episode, longtime sponsor. We'll get back more into the regular mentions for windstormproducts.com when hurricane season comes around. But now's the time to start preparing, not only for hurricane season, but the rainy season in general. More and more flooding across Florida, sea level will rise, storms are heavier, more runoff. You know the drill. Check out the Quick Dam Flood Barrier. This is, I dare say, a miracle product at the risk of sounding like a TV pitch man, but these are like magic bags you stick at your threshold. And when the water approaches, they fill up and do the work of many, many, many sandbags with far less the effort. And then when the threat is over, you remove them, pop them, and throw them away or reuse them again if the water never comes. Check out the Quick Dam Flood Barriers at windstormproducts.com. All right. This week's episode takes us to the far western edge of Florida, Pensacola. That's now, Craig, are you from Pensacola or around Pensacola?
I am from Pensacola. Right. And I remember when I was growing up, the mayor, who is a car dealer named Vince Wibbs, who also happened to be a member of the John Birch Society, he had this whole spiel that he would deliver at the drop of a hat, which was, "Welcome to the western gate to the Sunshine State, where thousands live like millions wish they could." Which, you know,
oh, I love it.
It pretty well sums it up.
Great elevator pitch. Here I am in Fernandina Beach. Pensacola is a full 400 miles from where I am, the same distance as Miami. And it's in a different time zone. And, you know, it's right there by Alabama. So we it's easy to kind of overlook Pensacola as a piece of Florida. But Carl Wernicke is not going to allow us to do that. Maybe Pensacola's second most prominent son after Emmett Smith. He's a native of Pensacola, longtime Pensacola News Journal reporter and editor.
I'm looking forward to this. Carl knows where some of the bodies are buried in Pensacola. Carl, thanks so much for joining us today. I'm really looking forward to this conversation, since I know a little bit about the topic. You were actually born in Pensacola, right?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Pensacola. Worked my whole career at the Pensacola News Journal, other than my first 3 years after I graduated from the University of Florida at the Mobile Press Register, and then came over and worked on a real dinosaur, the Pensacola News, an afternoon newspaper, which was still in existence at the time. When I was a kid, you know, we got both papers, and I just thought when you had a subscription to the paper, you got a morning paper and an afternoon paper. It was only years later I realized they were actually different.
When people hear you're from Pensacola, what kind of reactions do you get?
People know Pensacola, particularly because of the Navy. So many people are familiar with Pensacola because of it, and then so many people because of vacations. Then on the other hand, many people in this country, and particularly when we're over in Europe and talking to people, we tell them Florida. Oh, do you go to Disney World a lot? No, it's about 600 or 700 miles from here. Florida is a long state. A little known fact that I love, the distance between Pensacola and Miami is about the same as the distance between London and Berlin. So you can see why, how small Europe is and compared to the U.S. and why they don't get us.
One of the things I always like about to mention about Pensacola, and correct me if I'm wrong, Pensacola is one of the great also-rans of history, right? It was founded before St. Augustine.
That's why, for a while, we adopted the slogan, you know, the marketers came up with first place city, because, you know, we were trying to get away from City of Five Flags, one of the five flags being the Confederate flag. So they had to get away from that. But yeah, 1559, Tristan Luna arrives here with about 1500 people, and they're unloading and they're thinking it's going to be great. Unfortunately, they leave most of their supplies, including their food, on their ships in the bay, and a hurricane sweeps in, pretty much destroys the fleet, sinks many of the ships, takes a lot of their food with it. They hung on for about 2 years, and then got out of here. And of course, then St. Augustine came along, and now boasts being the oldest continuous settlement in the United States. We also, among the diehards in Pensacola, claim the first shots of the Civil War. Lincoln had to decide between reinforcing Charleston or reinforcing, you know, Fort Sumter, or reinforcing Fort Pickens here, which the Federals still clung to. And of course, it went there. But there were actually supposedly some shots fired here outside the Pensacola Naval Yard the day before. Although a friend of mine did some real research on it and did his, he was a historian out at the Gulf Islands National Seashore. And did a thesis on it and determined that probably what happened was back then the guards would have a powder load in their musket, but no ball. And they would fire it as a warning if someone was going on, and also to signal back that something was going on. And a ragtag band of rebels did approach. And one of these guards may have fired off a ballless musket load. But anyway, we still claim. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. Pensacola, no balls. Is there a celebration for the lunatics who tried to start Pensacola?
Yes. And in fact, you know, Luna comes ashore every year as part of the Mardi Gras, the Fiesta Festival. And so somebody, I think, gets to pay money and they get to be Luna and dress up and come ashore. But for a long time, the holy grail of archaeology, I mean, I might argue in the United States, but certainly in Florida and Pensacola, was Luna's original site, which no one could find until a few years ago. A friend of mine who's long been interested in archaeology, Craig, you're familiar with him, Tom Garner, constantly just looking and looking and looking, happened to find the site where a house had been torn down and the pool had been dug out. And he found scattered on the surface of the ground a bunch of pottery, which after years of research, he thought might well be 16th century Spanish pottery. And that's what it turned out to be. So now Luna's site has been found, and they've been digging on it regularly through the University of West Florida.
You mentioned the naval base in Pensacola and how most people associate the town with that military presence. I certainly do. The only reason I have been to Pensacola is because I had a girlfriend at the time whose sister was graduating from the officer school there. How did the Navy get to Pensacola, and what is the scope of the operation there?
The first industry in Pensacola, as far as we can tell, was harvesting longleaf pine as ship masts. That's what the Spanish were after. There was a lot of oak here, but a lot of pine and those masts. And so the Navy, recognizing the value of this bay and all that, set up a shipyard here in 1826, the Pensacola Navy Yard. So, you know, we've been around a long, long time. Of course, the Europeans saw Pensacola Bay as one of the finest bays around. One of them commented that you could shelter all the navies of Europe within Pensacola Bay, which is a large, shallow bay with a relatively narrow mouth, which makes it difficult to find. In fact, going back and forth, a lot of times the explorers would miss it. I think Luna first went to Mobile Bay, and then they realized they were in the wrong place and worked their way back here. And of course, the Navy recognized us and built Fort Pickens. That began in, I think, the late 1830s, built with slaves, with slave labor in addition to other labor. But three forts were built: to Fort Pickens on the end of Santa Rosa Island, Fort McRae right across the mouth of the bay, and then Fort Barrancas further up the bay. And because the Union held Fort Pickens throughout the course of the war, Pensacola, which probably would have emerged as a major port for the South, was denied to the Confederacy because they simply couldn't get past the guns of Fort Pickens.
Wow. How big is the naval base there now in terms of folks who work there and then the size of the operation?
It's quite large. You've got a number of naval facilities. You've got Pensacola Naval Air Station, which is home of the Blue Angels. They winter out in Arizona, but they train here in Pensacola, and we're quite used to them. In fact, my house is not far from the Navy base, and when they're here training, it's a regular event to go out and see them out there. But you have a number of Corey Station, which handles a lot of the cryptography stuff. We put a lot of the fleet technicians through here. People who handle all kinds of duties on board ships come through here constantly. Over in Santa Rosa County, which is right next door to us, you've got Whiting Field, which is primary training for both fixed wing and helicopter pilots. I think all helicopter pilots go through Whiting. Whiting is generally considered the most busy Navy airfield in the country, and maybe one of the busiest airports in the world, simply because the flights are constantly cycling through there. So the Navy is really omnipresent here, and it used to be called strictly a Navy town. It's a little broader now, but it's still very much a Navy town. We have the National Museum of Naval Aviation, a Smithsonian level museum, a fantastic place, which unfortunately is a little hard to get to right now because we had a terrorist incident a couple of years ago on the base, and they've really restricted public access to it. Although that thing was a Saudi officer who was training here, and it really didn't have anything coming from the outside, but it's still very difficult to get on the base now.
Now, let me just mention, anybody who saw the movie An Officer and a Gentleman saw a sort of a version of one of the longtime Florida institutions involved in the Navy. There was a bar called TJ's in the movie.
Yes, which I understand was filmed out in California. But Craig, you're well familiar with Trader John's. Trader John Weissman, he now has Trader's has actually been mostly torn down. There's a building that's there. It's an event space now. But there is a historical marker out on the sidewalk.
And a museum display, too, right, that recreates the inside of the bar?
Yes, over at the Florida State Museum, which was called the T.T. Wentworth Florida State Museum, another issue Craig is familiar with, until a local historian, again, my friend Tom Gardner, doing research, came up that T.T. Wentworth was the head of the Ku Klux Klan here locally. And the state had to scramble to get his name off the museum. But Trader has a display there, quite a good display with a lot of original stuff from Trader.
Tell us a little bit about Trader John.
Trader was a guy who came here, I think, up from Miami, built this bar, which became a favorite of journalists, politicians, and particularly the Navy. He was pretty much adopted by the Blue Angels. I guess you'd call him the official bartender of the Blue Angels. For much of Pensacola, it was considered a dive. And for many years, you told someone that you actually went to Trader's. Some of the ladies of a more delicate reputation would be shocked mm-hmm. that you actually went to Trader John's. But it was a real institution. And I mean, Trader would, you know, depending upon who you were, what you were, military, journalist, politician, you know, whether he liked you or he didn't like you, there were ascending scale of what a drink at Trader's would cost you. For some people, it was almost free. For a lot of people, it was a buck. And for other people, it would be a lot more. And the one thing Trader always controlled was he sat at the cash register the entire time. So he kept his hands on the cash. But he was something else. I mean, and he took care of people. People run short of money, could always depend on Trader if he knew them and liked them.
He financed at least one field trip for a Pensacola News Journal reporter that I know of.
That's right. I remember you talking about that. Yes. Kent Coxon had to go cash a check there for you.
When you're telling people about Pensacola, what's something you tell them about it that you're proud of, that you tout as something good about the city?
Increasingly, downtown Pensacola, which has come a long, long way. When I first came back to the News Journal in 1978, downtown was pretty much, I wouldn't call it a wasteland, but it wasn't in good shape. You know, a lot of rundown stores and unoccupied and that kind of stuff. But today, downtown Pensacola is really becoming an attraction. But prior to that, obviously, we have the beaches, Pensacola Beach, which and Pensacola's beaches, particularly all along the Panhandle, are some of the finest in the world. And I mean, I've talked to people who've traveled all over the world. I talked to a musician who worked on cruise ships and said the only beaches that he considered maybe equal to Pensacola was in South Africa. And I've been to Waikiki Beach, and as a beach, Pensacola Beach beats it. Then you've got Gulf Islands National Seashore, which is protected a lot of Santa Rosa Island, which is a white sand barrier island, obviously where Pensacola Beach is. Fort Pickens is on the island. The natural beauty of the area, Pensacola Bay itself. And speaking of Pensacola Bay, the New York Yacht Club is now opened a facility here and has been practicing with American Magic, the high-tech entry in the America's Cup. And they've moved about 30, 35 people here on a permanent basis. They have a facility down at the port. And it's quite a thrill to see American Magic up on its foils racing across the bay. But generally, you know, Pensacola, it's a friendly town. I know my wife would talk about she would employ a lot of Navy wives, and for a lot of them, they would be coming here right after something like San Diego or whatever. And when they first get to Pensacola, they were in tears saying, you know, we're doing my husband's 2 years and we're out of here. But by the time those 2 years are up, they'd be tearful about having to leave because there's something about Pensacola. It's a very welcoming and friendly place. And people really like it here.
Yeah. You mentioned the bay, and I'm wondering how the oyster harvest is doing there.
That's unfortunate. For many years, East Bay oysters have a real reputation locally. There was never a huge commercial crop, but it was local. And a lot of local restaurants would serve the East Bay oysters. And I was with a lot of locals. I personally thought the East Bay oyster was one of the best oysters I've ever eaten. But over the years, development, stormwater, runoff, that sort of thing have really degraded the bays. And there's been something of a collapse. There's been a bit of a small commercial oystery that's kept going. And people have been trying to create oyster farms, which keep getting interrupted by hurricanes. All the fresh water that gets into the bay damages them. The Nature Conservancy has come in and is doing a large project up in East Bay, particularly in Escambia Bay, restoring the oyster reefs, building what they call the living shorelines along the shore to restore the grasses. And there's a lot of hope that the restoration will help bring the oysters back, although some people are still concerned that unless they further clean up the water quality, that that won't work. But East Bay oystering, I mean, that's something. When I lived on Garcon Point, there's a man who lived next door to me, Ron Johnson, who's a great fella. His family had been relocated over to Garcon Point in the 1940s when the federal government came in and bought up huge tracts of land to create Eglin Air Force Base, which is just east of us. One of the things he did was, he was a welder, he made oyster rakes and sold a lot of them to the local oyster fishermen. I once bought one of his rakes, just, I considered it local folk art. I was going to, when he died, I was going to donate it to a local museum, but his widow said she just didn't have any and begged me to, so I just gave it back to her. It had a real impact on the area, and we're all hopeful the oysters will return.
Your comments about the Navy wives reminded me, Andrew Jackson was there as territorial governor, and his wife hated the place.
I think it was she, though, who referred to it as a perfect plain. And the current mayor of Pensacola returned to Pensacola and opened a bar called a brewery called the A Perfect Plain. So there's a little trivia for you. He has since sold it to someone else, but he's now the mayor.
There's a pretty active art community there, too, isn't there?
Yes, there is. We have quite a good museum. We have a lot of artists. We have a number of different art galleries. Pensacola has always had a lot of very creative people, artists, writers, musicians, a lot of good music here. The museum brings in a lot of good things. We had one of Clyde Butcher's things in here. We had the Florida Highwayman painting display come through. So we've got an opera, which is very good. We have an excellent symphony. I think in those ways, Pensacola punches above its weight.
If folks are interested in learning more about Clyde Butcher or the Florida Highwaymen, we have episodes in the archives about both of those topics. When we started the episode, you talked about the unique geography of Pensacola and how removed it is from those parts of Florida that people most associate with Florida, Orlando and South Beach and the Everglades. You are obviously much, much closer to Alabama than those parts of Florida. The identity of Pensacola, is it more connected to Florida or you know, that LA, Lower Alabama kind of reputation?
It's a good question. You don't hear it much anymore, but you know, 20, 30 years ago, there used to be sort of active talk about trying to get us annexed into Alabama. I think a lot of people, a lot of development interests particularly figured there would be fewer restrictions and regulations. But a lot of people feel this area is more akin to Alabama because Alabama is not only to our west, it's also to our north, you know, and then, of course, Georgia, you know. L.A., Lower Alabama is what a lot of people think of it. So, and we are very different from Florida. You know, I've always said that you get south of, say, Ocala and Lake City, Florida's not the South. Here it is, very much so. And the panhandle is still very much smaller. I mean, you take Pensacola Beach again. One of the things many locals like about the beach is, even though it's a big tourist draw, I mean, for instance, Gulf Islands National Seashore, which also extends into Alabama and Mississippi, but it's one of the best visited parks in the National Park Service. In 2021, and I looked it up, it's the ninth most visited park in the system with 5.5 wow. million visitors. Yet Pensacola Beach itself, even in an area which, you know, many years ago wasn't really seen as that environmental minded, much of the beach itself is protected. So you go to places like Destin and Panama City, just the incredible density of the development on the beaches can be disheartening to people who are really looking for the natural beauty. Well, you come to Pensacola Beach, 14 miles of Santa Rosa Island are protected in Gulf Islands. And even within the 7-mile stretch of development that's controlled by Escambia County, and is one our main tourist engine, there are large portions of it, even on the Gulf, that are still open with dunes with public parking access. So even though it's a big tourist beach, locals still have a lot of access to Pensacola Beach. And that gives us a totally different feel than a lot of the other tourism areas in Florida.
Now, when you're talking about the number of tourists, are you counting the number of UFOs that come by? I'm referring to the Gulf Breeze incident, of course.
Yes. Well, of course, we had the famous UFO incident that eventually was proved to be a hoax and was filmed in probably in an attic. Although it was pretty well done. Although I had a regular letter writer to the News Journal who assured me that he had seen UFOs landing and taking off in the bay where they maintained a secret underwater facility. And I mean, you know, what do you say to people when they tell you this in all earnestness?
Pensacola is in Florida's first congressional district. And let's just be kind to say it has a notorious representative in Matt Gaetz. Matt Gaetz, who was actually in the news the day this episode is recording for, I guess, federal prosecutors are not going to prosecute him on child sex trafficking charges. Obviously, the man's popular enough to be elected there. What's the cliff notes on this notorious figure?
Well, the first congressional district of Florida has the highest percentage of retired veterans in the U.S. It's one of the reddest districts in the country. In 2016, Trump won this district by 40 points. Romney won it by 39 points in 2012, which is interesting. Gaetz won 64% of the vote in his last election. He actually did better than Trump. The thing is, you know, as conservative we are, there are also very liberal component to this area. Politicians would always come through and talk to journalists and ask me, and people say, oh, I'm going to run. You know, everybody tells me it's time to take this. I would always tell the Democrats who came to me, and I said, look, and now I have to set this in context. 30 or 40 years ago, everybody here was Democrats. And if you wanted to do anything, you needed to be a Democrat. But that started to change like so much else did in the 60s when Lyndon Johnson and the Democrats put the Civil Rights Act and those things through Congress. A lot of the old Democrats started leaving and becoming Republicans. And now, if you want to do anything here, you need to be a Republican. I would tell candidates coming through, look, you give me a really strong Democratic candidate running for a U.S. House here, well-funded, good campaign, you win 35% of the vote. Give me any Democratic candidate, I don't care who it is, a yellow dog, and you're going to get 30 or 32%. But the Republicans are just going to win. Gaetz hardly campaigned against a Democrat. In his last primary, a Republican ran against him who 20 years ago would have been the perfect Republican candidate, you know, a veteran, well-spoken, conservative. Gaetz waxed him and hardly campaigned. So he's a lock here as long as he wants to keep running.
What's the appeal?
Well, he's well-spoken. He appeals to the Trump base. I mean, even with a lot of Republicans abandoning Trump, Gaetz is still strong for Trump. And people here really like Trump. It was no mystery that Trump came here repeatedly for campaign stops and would just fill the Pensacola Civic Center. It's just politically a very conservative district, always has been.
But let me ask you about two other things. First, Pensacola also has long had a very active gay community.
Yes, it has. Very much so. And in fact, every May, every Memorial Day, we have a huge gathering of gays. It's become kind of their official holiday every year. And it's massive. I mean, they fill Pensacola Beach. And it's interesting. Generally speaking, you know, it's kind of accepted. And certainly the business community has because it's become so big. Traditionally here, the religious community and the conservatives didn't like it. you just don't hear that much anymore. I think it was that tension between the business side and the personal, religious, whatever side.
And then and there used to be rather famous drag balls in the old San Carlos Hotel.
Oh, yeah. Robbie's Yum Yum Tree was a famous gay bar for many years. And I mean, you'd go there and I mean, it was drag shows and this kind of stuff. So this was just, you know, blatantly and openly going on, even when gays were still very much in the closet, you know, on a personal basis. So it's one of those things. It was one of those dichotomies in our, you know, in the people here. It's just, you know, you wouldn't think it, but that's the way it was.
Yeah. And Pensacola also has a very active Black community, too. And in fact, one of Pensacola's most famous most famous natives is the Air Force first four-star Black general, right?
Daniel Chappie James. Yes. Who famously faced down Muammar Gaddafi at Wheeler Air Force Base in Libya. Yeah, it's like everywhere else. Booker T. Washington back in the early 1900s cited Pensacola as like a model Black community. The races got along very well. There was a rising and prosperous Black middle class. And Pensacola actually had a majority Black population in the late 1800s. Hmm. But of course, the reaction to Reconstruction came along. And I think it was, I want to say it was a governor from Florida came along. And as the white reaction was coming, they essentially overthrew by state statute the Florida, the Pensacola Council, which was had a Black mayor and Black aldermen, and installed a white controlling. We had our Jim Crow facts. The rising Black business group was basically shoved back, pushed back into the Belmont DeVillers area, which kind of became insular. A lot of progress that was happening was thrown back all by that Jim Crow era. It was a very sad time. We had a Black hospital here. Pensacola went from being a model to being as regressive as many other places. As I said, T.T. Wentworth, who was a county commissioner and a political leader, was head of the Klan, and they pretty much effectively kept the Blacks down. And it's taken a long time. Booker T. Washington High School, named, of course, for Booker T. Washington, wasn't integrated until 1969. I don't remember seeing more than, and I won't even say a handful of Blacks in my elementary school. My junior high school, I saw a few Black students. I really didn't see too many Blacks, and then not that many until Woodham High School in the 1970s when integration started bringing more Blacks into there. So that's how long segregation went on here. There were riots at Escambia High School where their name was the Rebels, and they didn't want to give that up. And eventually they had to. But so again, you know, here I was basically becoming an adult before integration even happened in the schools here. Hmm. So yeah, there's still a long way to go.
I think there's only been two governors from Pensacola. One was John Milton, who was the governor during the Civil War, and the other is Reuben Askew, who's considered one of the best governors Florida's ever had.
Yes, one of the most progressive and a well-respected attorney here. We've had our share of famous politicians, of course. There's Matt Gaetz, Joe Scarborough, currently known as Morning Joe to the national media or the national audience. Was a congressman here and considered quite conservative in his day and time. Now, many Republicans consider him a rhino, especially for his staunch opposition to Trump. But of course, and showing the wisdom of that old saw that you never name public facilities for living politicians. I mean, we've seen with T.T. Wentworth, it's dangerous even after they're dead. But of course, you're well familiar with Bolly Bo Johnson, who was Speaker of the Florida House and ended up in jail for tax evasion and was responsible for the toll bridge known as Bo's Bridge or Bo's Folly, as some people called it. which was recently finally purchased by the state, which was probably a good thing, and it needed to happen. But he was very much involved in pushing that. And then he and his wife both went to jail for tax evasion. And then, of course, the Hikun Bob Sykes, who was a longtime congressman for this area, who is a real power in Washington, and has pretty much escaped most notoriety. There were a few skeletons in his closet there, but he did so much to build the military bases in this area. And then W.D. Childers, the Banny Rooster.
He and me and W.D.
who was fond of many, many sayings, one of which is what he liked to put the hay down where the goats could get to it. And he became Senate president, extremely powerful. And then went on to, when term limits came along, he became the dean of the Senate. And indeed was, so far as I know, especially since term limits have come in, was the longest serving Florida legislator, having served in the Florida House and then the Senate. W.D. brought back, I don't know, about $16 million to Pensacola to build the Civic Center, which is still there and operating. So in honor of him and gratitude, they named the road around it W.D. Childers Plaza.
Ouch.
Well, when W.D. got term limited out of the Senate, he came back and ran for Florida legislature, for the county commission, and of course easily won. His ego kind of ran away with him, and W.D. kind of came in here and started throwing elbows around. And we had always considered in the newspaper business that there was always kind of a low level of government corruption going on in this area. And a lot of the people involved didn't even really see it as corruption. You know, it was who you know and information you could get and a little, people helping people. That's the way you did it around here. And, you know, if someone helped you get a contract, well, you know, that was good business and good politics, whatever. Well, WD came in and kind of pushed all that aside and kind of taking over. And I don't think he realized how he was offending the powers that be. Anyway, a news journal investigation eventually uncovered that WD bribed another county commissioner to help make some land purchases that the WD favored. And the most famous incident in this was that Willie Jr., the commissioner who was bribed and who ended up found dead underneath a home in Pensacola underneath the porch, which many people were very suspicious of his death, famously testified that WD bribed him with cash in a collard pot that he handed over to him. And
$10,000, as I recall.
Yeah, something like that. That became the symbol of the whole corruption episode. And WD ended up going to jail.
Have they changed the name of the road?
You know, Craig, I meant to drive over there and see. I think it's still named for Childers.
Last one from me, big picture, and coming to back to today. What's the big issue? What's the big topic? If I look at the front page of the paper or turn on the radio or people talking on social media or just at the cafe, what is the pressing matter today in Pensacola?
It's growth. Pensacola isn't growing as fast as the rest of the state, and so we're really pushing out. And a few years ago, the county commission managed to convince the Navy to trade us OLF, they call them outlying fields, where they train. And they needed fields. They built an outlying field out in Santa Rosa County where the Navy could continue to do their touch and goes with all their aircraft and all this. And they've got this, I think it's an 800-acre site up in the north part of the county, which is going to be redeveloped. D.R. Horton Homes, a national home builder, just came in and offered this county $33 million for the whole site. Navy Federal is right there. I think they're continuing to build huge sites. They've got at least 10,000 employees there. This is the Navy Federal Credit Union. So it's growth. I myself and my wife built a house a few years ago over on the west side of downtown, which was one of the sleepiest areas in the city for many years. And it's now there's growth all over the area. So we're trying to deal with that. That's one thing that's impacting the bays, for instance, having to deal with the stormwater runoff and accommodate all the new housing that's being built in the road. So I certainly think growth is a thing. Downtown is really becoming an intense development site, which is where a lot of today they'd like to see development. The infrastructure is already there, the roads, the sewer, the water, all that. But it's burgeoning all over. You know, this Navy Federal thing's probably 8 to 10 miles north of Pensacola, and that's where the OLF development is going on. So there's going to be thousands of new homes built there. So that's the number one thing right now.
There were two other things I was going to ask you about real quick. One is, what's the status of Mount Dioxin, which is, I think, the third largest Superfund site in America?
Well, we've got three Superfund sites in this area. All of them a problem. Supposedly, they're going to be looking at doing more. It has been pretty much cleaned up. They're considered brownfield sites now, and they're looking to redevelop them. You wouldn't redevelop them for housing, but they could be sites for industry, light industry, warehousing, that kind of thing. So that's something that's being focused on now, to look at those sites as redevelopment. I know some years ago when Hurricane Ivan came along and shocked everyone, essentially knocked out our sewage treatment plant. That was moved north with FEMA funds and local funds. So now you've got a big 19-acre site right down in downtown Pensacola that's being looked at, but it needs to be cleaned up. It's not a Superfund site, but it needs to be further cleaned up. So again, once that's done, and these other areas will allow that also. Yeah, that Superfund legacy is still getting us. I mean, back then they would create ponds, throw the logs in them, and dump creosote in there to treat them. And of course, that all soaked into the groundwater. So we still have a lot of contaminated groundwater.
What was the contamination from? Is this from like railroad ties or mining? What
creosote, telephone poles, yeah. Railroad ties, all that treated stuff. And like I say, they just dig a pond, throw the stuff in there, and treat it. Bayou Chico, which is slowly recovering, for years, they would bring ships, boats in there. They would bring the teak and other logs in from South America, raft them up in the bayou, and then dump the water treating chemicals right into the bayou. For many years, ship captains would know that they would come, and they would come and anchor for 2 or 3 days in Bayou Chico, and that would kill all the marine growth on their hull. So we're still dealing with that. A lot is being done to restore Bayou Chico, and it's certainly much better than it was, although the sediments in it are still very bad. But the county is doing a lot of stormwater treatment up north of that.
Well, the other thing I was going to ask is, did I read correctly that Pensacola's only abortion clinic closed? Because the city's got this long, violent history in the battle over abortion.
Yeah, so we were very famous for abortion bombing here and the murder of an abortion doctor. The clinic here closed for a variety of reasons. I didn't read it too closely, but I mean, all the pressure is creating problems. So that's another interesting thing. As conservative and religious as this area was, we were a site for abortions. And in fact, my father was acted as an escort because of all the protests there. They started needing escorts to safely get the personnel in and the women who were coming for abortions. And there would be daily protests there. And of course, I think my father was on escort duty the day before the murder occurred of the doctor. So it was quite a tense area at the time. On a better note, I was going to say one thing I had when I was doing notes, I was going to mention just to our north, we've got one of the largest state forests in Florida, Blackwater River State Forest.
A beautiful place.
200,000 acres, beautiful hiking, canoeing, beautiful streams there, Coldwater Creek, Blackwater River, those sort of things. So I was also going to mention, just as a legacy of our past, on Perdida Key, which is part of Gulf Islands National Seashore today, a portion of it, there's something as Johnson Beach. Johnson Beach was the black beach because, of course, blacks couldn't go to Pensacola Beach. And on Perdida Key, Johnson Beach was named for Rosamond Johnson, who had lied about his age to enlist in the army and served in Korea and was killed in Korea while trying to rescue wounded fellow soldiers. And of course, right downtown, right now they're building up Bruce Beach, which on the bay for the city was the local Black Beach. And there's a lot of effort being put in to sort of make sure the historical record is on that, so people understand, you know, what that beach was and what it meant to the community at the time. So those legacies are still with us, you know, on an everyday basis.
Carl Wernicke has been our guest, longtime editor, reporter at the Pensacola News Journal. Thank you so much for sharing your insights on the far western edge of Florida with us today.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Thanks, Carl.
One thing I forgot to mention was IHMC. I would have liked to have gotten that in, but...
What's that?
IHMC, the Institute for Human and Machine Cognition.
What is that?
It's an incredible research facility. Might be something someday if you're looking something to write on. It's formed here and it's expanding by leaps and bounds. I worked there for 2 years after I left the News Journal doing their newsletter and this kind of stuff. The kind of stuff they do NASA contracts, all kinds of stuff. He pulled me over there one day and said, this is when I was still at the News Journal. He said, you want to sit in on a blue sky episode? I said, sure. He said, all right, sit against the wall. He said, don't talk. He said, don't tell anybody what you, for God's sakes, don't tell them you're a journalist. I said, oh. So I went in there and I sat there, and there were all these scientists with computers, you know, and they had a big screen. After about 5 minutes, I realized what they were doing was NASA had paid him to bring all these experts together to brainstorm on what the best orbit to Mars would be. That's the kind of thing that they work on.
Dang.
And they're really into robotics, and they're doing human performance. I mean, they've worked with SR-71 pilots. They work with the special operations people out of Hurlburt, just remarkable people. So for a city like Pensacola, it is amazing. Again, sort of an example of us punching over our weight. Ken Ford, the head of it, is one of the most respected AI researchers in the country. And the people he brings here are top notch in terms of robotics. And now I say human performance and resilience. Dawn Cornegus is here leading the group. She was a world-leading deep sea diver, and she's leading that group. And they're building a 20 or $30 million expansion right now. They just broke ground on where they'll put the human performance people in, doing the research on that. So longevity and that sort of thing. So again, it'll be cutting edge.
Thanks, Carl.
All right.
Was it difficult for you leaving the Pensacola area, Craig?
Well, yes and no. It was tough because, you know, that's the first place in Florida I knew. I felt like I knew it best. You know, my family was there, but I had really kind of burned out on covering the politics there, and so I got a job down in the Sarasota area, and it messed with me for about a year that when I moved down there, that the Gulf was in the wrong place. You know, I was used to it being south of me all of my life. And now suddenly it's to the west. And I'm like, okay. And I would seriously get lost trying to drive around. Let me tell you about one particular experience I had growing up in Pensacola that I think kind of sums up Pensacola. We had a day when kids were supposed to be pretending to be city councilmen. We all got designated a city councilman to follow around.
Dream.
Yeah. And so the city councilman I was following around was a guy named Lou Brown. Uh-huh. Clearly the smartest guy on the city council, but he had a real drinking problem too. Basically, anytime after 6 o'clock, he was slurring his words and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm following him around and he's, you know, nipping away. And now it's 7 o'clock. It's time for a city council meeting. And we go in and I'm sitting behind, you know, we're each sitting behind our council member to observe, and the room is packed. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know why there were so many people there. Well, it turns out that most of the pastors in Pensacola had turned out to protest that the Pensacola Civic Auditorium was going to allow a performance of O Calcutta, where everybody was going to be nude. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to complain to the city council about that. And I looked out and there's my own pastor is one of the people in the crowd. And the somewhat inebriated councilman I was sitting behind said, you see more than that at Trader John's every week. And he was right. There were strippers at Trader John's, and, you know, they didn't protest that, but they protested this one show that was coming in.
Yeah. Well, welcome to Pensacola and welcome to Florida.
Welcome to Florida.